This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca. The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
Welcome to Lunch with a Healer. I'm Dr. Susan Hoffman, and today I have the pleasure of introducing you to a fascinating young lady, Dawn Cady. Having struggled with debilitating diversity for over 30 years, Dawn, a former chronic pain sufferer, healed herself and learned to walk again. She's developed a multi-award-winning program called the Neuro Alignment Method to help you to achieve true freedom from pain naturally. Dawn is also a transformational coach who works with entrepreneurial women around the world to help them propel their business to new and exciting heights while guiding them to improve and enhance all aspects of their lives. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Susan.
Oh, I think it's going to be my pleasure. You have a powerful personal story about your journey. Please share some of it so that my listeners understand how your wisdom was born, not just from education, but of experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was one of those children that was in and out of hospital, a lot of things wrong, just minor, trivial things like ears, nose, and throat. But I spent predominantly a lot of my life feeling sick and not feeling well. And when I got to the age of about 19, they progressively got worse. It was like kidney issues, bowel issues. It started to become worse and worse the older that I got. And by the time I was age 22, that was the first time that I was actually disabled from a disease called ulcerative colitis. So it went undiagnosed for a long time and my organs started to shut down. I only had at that time 1.5 pints of blood left in my body. And it started from there. That's where my healing journey actually started. So from that point is when I started to think, you know what? The mainstream is brilliant with the acute management of what's going on for me. But for this chronic issue, it seems that it's just drugs upon drugs upon drugs. And I was on 32 tablets a day by the time I left the hospital. And it took me a long time to learn how to walk again. And what I started to realize is a lot of emotions were coming up and I needed to have a lot of trust and faith in my body. So how it started was when I was wheeled down to the theater to have my bowel removed, I had this knowing, this deep knowing, Dr. Susan, that that was not the right thing for me. And I was in England at the time. I live in Australia now, but I was in England at the time. We had to sign this declaration form and I wouldn't sign it. And the stoma nurse had been around and she'd drew exactly where I was going to be cut open, where the colostomy bag would be. So I was there at the operating theatre. The anaesthetist was there waiting to do the countdown, but I wouldn't sign the forms. This happened 3 times. I was wheeled down 3 times and I wouldn't sign the forms. And my mum said to me, she said, "Why is it that you're not going to have the operation? They're saying that you're going to die without it." I went, "Mum, I just know. I've spoken to my body and I know it sounds crazy, but I need for you to believe me because nobody else is believing me right now. But I just have this knowing that my bowel's going to heal itself. I just need to talk to it." Now people thought I was insane. I was crazy because I've not been eating for over 2 weeks at that point. So being in hospital, not able to eat. And I started to talk to my bowel and I was saying, "It's safe. It's okay. It's time to heal and repair." I just started doing this and suddenly my blood count started to replace. I was losing a lot of blood, but not replacing it. And then suddenly this new drug came in at that time, which was called cyclosporine.
Right.
And that was to have my bowel be accepted by my body.
Right.
And it was used for transplants. It was used for organ transplants. So if you had an organ transplant, I was like an experiment in England at this time to try this drug out on ulcerative colitis to see if it would allow me to keep my bowel.
Right.
And that's the journey that I went on. And I still to this day have my bowel. I was told that I would have bowel cancer or I would have to have it removed. And neither. My bowel is completely fine. I had one flare-up after that, and then I had never had another flare-up.
Really?
So that was the start of my healing journey, and I thought that it was very important for me to share that, that when you understand and recognize how powerful you are, how powerful your mind is, and that I bought into what I knew inside of me, and I didn't listen to all of the experts that were telling me completely different, which I couldn't comprehend that. I couldn't explain it to anybody. I began that journey of listening to my body, and that is how this continued. So I would eventually get sick again and again and again, and each time I would listen more and more.
How long a journey was it for you from being wheeled down for a possible surgery to where you are now? Was it years, months?
It was, so after that point, I started to heal myself. I took myself off of all of the drugs. My body, for a period of time, I think it was for about maybe 18 months, it felt right to be on these drugs. It felt like it was the right path. And then it got to about the 18-month point, and then my body started talking to me again and going, I need for you to come off of these drugs. Now, I know that that might sound weird that my body's communicating with me, but it was almost like this knowing, this sense of knowing that it was time to come off. So I started to wean myself. The doctors were saying I was insane for doing this, that I shouldn't be doing this, that it's irresponsible. And I spoke to a doctor and I said, look, I've followed everything that you've said, and I've also kept within sovereignty of myself and integrity of myself as well. And I've been doing my own things. I've changed my diet. I'm looking at the emotions. I'm starting to sense that my childhood has a lot to do with what's going on for me. And he was looking at me a little bit strange. And he was like, okay. He said, I'm going to trust you because you're right. He said, you refuse the operation and yet you're here.
Right.
He said, and I've told you to take these tablets and you are taking them. Okay, let's go with what you're saying. I'm not going to change your mind. I'm like, no, you're not. So basically, I started to come off the drugs. That was a journey of about 6 months. I weaned myself slowly off of all of the drugs. And then I had a flare-up about 6 months after. And what I noticed that the flare-up was in line with emotional issues that were happening. That was an absolute knowing that my body was correct in telling me that it was emotional. My mum had actually been sectioned under the Mental Health Act in England. She had a nervous breakdown. So as I was helping my parents through that stage of what was going on, I got a flare-up not long after.
Right.
So it was stress, and it was... Right. The immense pressure of what was going on, and being the parent for my mum and the advocate for my dad, it was a very strange experience. And that's when I started to go into, okay, there's more to this than meets the eye. There's something emotional here. There's something attached to the emotions. And then I didn't have another flare up again. So I started working on my issues with my mum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like you needed to go through flare ups in order to recognize the connection between your emotional and physiological. So most people would listen to this. Most of my listeners, some of them anyway, will be shaking their head saying, okay, you know, what does she mean by knowing? And you can't explain it unless you've, I think, experienced it. A deep knowing. It's just faith. It's a form of faith, I suppose.
Yeah. That's probably the easiest way to explain it. It's just this absolute knowing that you're so grounded in that it's true, that no matter what anyone says to you, no matter what is advised, nothing will change your mind. It's unshakable confidence in the truth of what you are knowing.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right. Like an epiphany of sorts.
Yeah. It's powerful beyond measure that you can't, no matter who spoke to you about it, no matter what expert. It's just this knowing, and it's owning the knowing. It's the step of that knowing coming through.
Right.
Bringing it into your being and going, you know what? This resonates. This feels right. It's okay. Like the unity of the two coming together just makes it unshakable.
So were you a spiritual person before this?
Absolutely not.
No, that's interesting. Yeah.
Absolutely not. Not religious. I had a bad experience with religion. My family on my mum's side was all Catholic and my dad was atheist. So there's been a lot of issues in religion. So I never sided. I just decided that I wasn't going to buy into any form of religion. I wasn't an atheist. I didn't not believe in it. Right. But no, I wasn't spiritual at all. Mm-mm.
Did you spend time meditating? Was it quieting your mind?
Never heard of it.
So that wasn't part of your progress? Really?
I didn't know it was meditation I was actually doing, because I was doing is I was speaking to my body and I'm going, it's safe, it's okay. I had no idea what I was doing. It was almost like my body was telling me what to do and I just surrendered to what it was saying and just went with it. And I was like, you know what? I'm at the point now, I'm 22 years of age, they want to cut me open. Right. I'm going to be scared. I'm going to be too embarrassed to go on the beach. I was in that vanity. I'm going to be too scared to go on the beach. I don't want to wear a swimming costume. I don't want to have my bowel removed. Like, it was just that kind of embarrassment. Yeah. So I was like, you know what? Whatever I have to do to avoid this surgery, I'm going to do. And that honestly was my mindset at the time. And I just followed and trusted.
Is there a difference between physiological and psychological when you're talking about chronic pain? Are they interconnected?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're just one end of the scale. You either come in with physical pain that will lead to emotional issues, or you'll come in with emotional issues that will lead to physical. They're one of the same. The mind and the body are connected through the nervous system. They're not separate. But we've been led to believe that they're two separate organisms and they don't communicate with one another.
Right.
Not the truth. They're linked through the nervous system.
Right. So this would work for acute pain as well. Any pain.
With acute pain, obviously there's an injury there, but you can reduce your own pain in that regard, because fearing pain is what exasperates it and makes it worse. So the more fear you have around it, the more that you're ramping your nervous system, the more unsafe you feel, the more control and power pain has over you.
Okay, so physical pain and emotional pain are basically two ends of a spectrum.
Yeah.
So when you're healing emotional pain, you are healing physical pain if they are connected. Dr. Louise Hay.
Yes.
Have you read about, you've read her, I'm sure.
I have read about her, yes. Her book came to me when I became injured a second time and ended up being disabled. Okay. Her book just came to me. I was just felt that I needed to buy this book. It was a bizarre experience once again. It was just this knowing I needed to read this book. I'd never heard of this woman. I had no idea what the book was about.
If someone has a right hip pain, she assimilates that to, for instance, maybe relationship issues or financial issues. Have you developed your program to that degree?
In relationship to that, my belief is if you go too much into the detail, you then become obsessed with the detail. So it's great as a knowing, it's great as a tool to understand your body and be able to go, oh, it's communicating with me through pain. But when you start going down the rabbit hole of looking for symptoms and putting out fires, the main issue is to be able to understand what's going on in your body and go, you know what? I've got this pain. Yes, it's in my hip, and that's possibly about me fear of moving forward in a relationship, say, for example. It's more of a tool to help you be able to go, okay, so there's more to my body and my mind than I am aware of. So it's more about education and educating yourself that you're more powerful and you have more control, rather than buying into the intricacy details, because then you'll just get caught up in that as well. So it's seeing the bigger picture as well. So that is the microscope version. So it's actually looking and going, okay, this is the detail. This is where all the fires are. These are all the symptoms that I'm experiencing, which tells me that there's something definitely going on with my body.
Right.
And possibly I've got fear of moving forward. I've got knee problems. I've got hip problems. So something is telling me I've got a fear of moving forward.
Right.
There's no need to go into such detail, because our minds love detail and we get lost in the detail that we don't end up solving anything, if that makes sense.
Yes,
so I like to
actually.
Yeah.
That was a wonderful explanation, actually. So how did you develop your neural alignment method and what does it entail?
So the neural alignment method is pretty much, I'm a great believer, we're all uniquely different. We're like a snowflake. So we look the same, but when you look under the microscope, we're completely different. We've had different experiences. We're a different sex. We have different DNA from our parents. We're so uniquely different that you can't expect a one-size-fits-all. So the neural alignment method is, I've studied over 150 modalities because I'm a great believer that each person may need 2 to 3 tools or techniques to get them through pain, to get them through suffering, and have them come out the other side feeling more powerful than the pain. So it's finding those tools and techniques. So what the neural alignment method does is it takes them through six stages where they find the tools that work for them. And it's not about judging and going, oh, this tool worked for such and such, should work for me. It's not like that. You're uniquely different. And it's about finding what works for your personality, for your life, for your experiences and for your pain and what's going on for you. So that's what the method does. And it takes people through different stages, such as responsibility. You must take full responsibility for your situation and circumstance, no matter who's caused it, what's happened to you. I mean, if I'd have lived in that, it's my mom's fault that I've experienced this. It's from the abuse of a childhood. It's the doctor's fault for doing this. It's the doctor's fault for doing that. I wouldn't be sat where I am right now. Dr. Susan, you have to take responsibility for your life. When you're a child, you have minimal choices. But as an adult, your life is fully your responsibility. Your health is fully your responsibility. And it's not about looking to other people to fix you and heal you. It's working with those practitioners, working with those doctors and saying, this is what's going on for me. What expertise, what tools can you bring to the table to help me move forward? And that is a huge milestone in someone's journey to take your responsibility, because it's not easy.
Is that
step really
one?
Isn't an easy
no.
Step.
Is that step one?
Step one. Yeah, that's step one. You can't do anything without that response, because what will happen is when you have a flare-up, when you have an experience in life, an external situation that disturbs you internally, if you're not taking responsibility, you'll go in the blame game, then you become a victim, and then what happens is you then become trapped in the cycle of suffering again and giving all your power away and going, it's because of that situation, it's because of that. But if you hold all responsibility for how your life is now and how it is moving forward, you have no escape of saying, oh, it's their fault. You've right. got to go, I've got to deal with this. It's okay for me to blame for a period of time, but at the end of the day, the buck stops with me and I've got to take responsibility and I've got to stand back up again.
Yeah.
Such a fundamental step.
Absolutely. I totally agree. That would be the most difficult step. Because you can talk about victim mentality, and not even in terms of physical illness. So you must battle that with some of your patients, I would think.
Absolutely. Yeah. In my pain clinics, absolutely in my pain clinics. With my online programs, a lot of people are probably between 70 and 80% already there with responsibility. The other 20 or 30% of that is hidden from them. They don't have an awareness that they haven't taken responsibility. And this is why you need someone external to you to hold a mirror up and say, is that possibly where you're giving your power away and your responsibility of your life? Because you don't know what you don't know. We right. all have our blind spots. No matter how well educated or how well versed I am in my own method, I still have my blind spots, because we do. We're human.
I was going to say, we're
not
human.
Perfect.
Right, exactly. And yes, you have to give yourself grace as well, that if it doesn't come quickly, that's okay. I guess self-compassion must be a big part of this.
Yes, and that's the next step, which is
it
the
is?
Acceptance. It is. It's the acceptance part.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to have compassion for yourself and accept your situation for what it is, because if you don't accept it, how can you have self-compassion?
Right.
You can't.
Right.
The two can't exist. If you're not accepting your situation, you will berate yourself, you'll beat yourself up, you'll call yourself a waste of space, a waste of time, it's all my fault, I'm a burden, I'm pathetic, and you'll come up with all these arguments to yourself to go, I can't do this, it's too hard. But if you accept your situation and your circumstance, and that doesn't mean to say that you're accepting it for the rest of your life, please
right.
know that. I've got a wonderful story of acceptance in relationship to my story that I think is going to really help your audience to understand where I'm coming from with this. But acceptance is about going, you know what, in this moment, I've got to accept my situation and circumstance, because if I don't, I'm going to be living in the past of where I used to be. Then I'm going to create depression, or I'm going to bounce to the future and I'm going to hope and pray and wish that I'm better, which means that your future projecting, which creates anxiety.
Right.
You're not helping yourself. You're just making the cycle and the circle bigger.
Right.
So it's about bringing yourself into the present moment, which I didn't understand about any of that meditation. That's when I started to investigate all this stuff and going, meditation is important because it's about bringing yourself back into your body so that your body can tell you the knowings and the understanding. And the reason why I was in hospital and I had that knowing is because I'd gone, I'm done. I'm going to die. And I don't want to be cut up open. I'm ready for whatever is being told to me. I'm open. I was an open vessel for the information to come through. And if you're not in acceptance, that information won't come through.
Right. You had completely surrendered because you're at your wit's end. Yes. Yeah, that would be a tough one. So eventually you did use meditation. Or you do tell your clients to meditate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And do you know what, Dr. Susan? It's not about this meditation suits you, this meditation suits you. It's about going, right, okay, can I sit still in silence? No, okay, so I need to listen to something.
Right.
And it's finding your way where you're at. And it's not comparing yourself to other people. And there's no right or wrong way of doing meditation. Some days I meditate whilst I'm walking. Some clients, they meditate just breathing. Some clients do it through yoga. Some clients do it through painting, drawing, coloring. It's different for everyone. We're all unique. So if you're trying meditation and you're pulling your hair out and going, it doesn't work for me, it's just that way doesn't work for you. You can meditate. Every single human being has the ability and capacity to meditate. You just have to find your way. And don't compare yourself to other people. And if it doesn't work, you just go, oh, I found a way that doesn't work. I won't be trying that way again. I'll try a different way.
Exactly.
And yeah, and that helps with acceptance as well, because you're accepting who you are when you're in your body. It helps you to accept who you are. And the story around the acceptance part, which it goes to when I slipped when I was pregnant. So I'm going to take you to another part where I became disabled. So I slipped when I was 5.5 months pregnant. I was left disabled. And unfortunately, I was told that I would be better by the time I had my son. And that wasn't the case. It became worse. The pain became horrendous. I became suicidal. I had PTSD, anxiety, depression, a whole host of issues. I had a procedure that went wrong. So I was just starting to get myself back on track and walking, but the pain was horrific. So I damaged a nerve called the obturator nerve, which is a nerve that runs through the leg through to the pubic bone and the pelvis area. And they gave me a nerve block. Unfortunately, what happened with the nerve block, it reset me to the worst state I'd ever been in. So it reset me straight back to having to learn how to walk again. I'd lost the use of my right leg. Now, what happened from this point, and this is acceptance, this is what I'm talking about, this is a deep lesson in acceptance. I pulled my hair out. I ended up going down on the path of being told by 3 practitioners, experts in their field, that this was my life. I was going to be disabled. I needed to deal with it. I needed to go see a clinical psych, and I needed to get some meds to get myself through this. That sent me over the edge. I had a nervous breakdown, and I became suicidal. And basically what happened is I had a conversation with myself again. That knowing came again. I was saying all these horrible things. You might as well just end your life. You're a burden to your husband. Right. You aren't any kind of mother.
Right.
The best thing that you can do is take your life and allow your husband and your son to move on and have a better life without you. And I bought into it and I believed it. So I was laid in bed in the fetal position, just thinking about the ways that I could end my life without my 18-month-old son finding me. And that voice, that knowing came back, and it said, it's not true. And I was like, what's not true? It said, all the things you're saying to yourself are not true. You have a purpose here. Your son needs you, and you're not a burden to your husband. And I just kept holding on to those words until I spiraled out. And I spiraled out of the depression. And I walked into the room and I looked my husband in the eyes, which I had not looked at him for weeks. And I stared at him and I said, I'm back. Now, at this point, I was not able to walk. I'd crawled on the floor and I'd stood up and I'd stared at my husband in the eyes and I'd stood up and I was holding onto the chair while I was looking at him. And he said, I know. I can see that you're coming back. I can see it in your eyes. And from that point, I knew to listen again, and I started listening to the knowing, the feelings, the sensations. And my doctor was like, Dawn, we've just got to accept that this is your life. I said, I can't accept that. He said, you've got to accept it. Let's get your insurance policies and let's cash in everything, because this is your life and you're not going to be able to go to work. You're in too much pain. And I got all my policies, I got all my reports, and I had my insurance documents. And I was told verbally by my solicitor that it was all going to go through. I'd passed every test to say that I'd had the permanent disability. Mm-hmm. All I needed to do was sign and send the forms back. This knowing came over me again. And he said, accept the situation that you're in, but know that it's not your future. And if you sign these forms, you're signing away your life to disability. And I put the forms away, and it was be about 2 or 3 months, and my doctor kept saying, have you put the forms in? And I'm like, no. I said, I'm accepting my life for what it is now, but I know that this is not my future. I'm accepting it right now. And I know that if I sign these forms and I put that claim in, I'm accepting that I'm disabled.
Right.
And I don't want to accept that. I want to accept that I'm in pain. I am disabled for now, and I'm in suffering. And I'm going to sit with this until I can accept it. And then I'm going to see how I feel. And it came through. And then it was only about a week or two, and I had this acceptance come over. It just washed over me. And suddenly I started to get more movement back in my leg. And I was like, I can't sign this form. I am not disabled. I am someone who's disabled for now, but I'm improving. I can feel it. So I ripped up the forms, forgot about the claim, and then I just continued. And that's my journey. I have got myself to a place with no pain, no diseases. I had 3 autoimmune diseases. I have no symptoms. I have had no flare-ups in any of these diseases. I've learned how to walk again 3 times. I've opened 2 pain clinics. I've created a method. I've gone through 2 years of clinical trials with those methods, created an online community and programs, and this beautiful method that's helping people come to a place where they can heal, because it's coming to a place of being able to heal.
That's incredible. That's it, truly an unbelievable story, wonderful story.
Thank you.
So, and you look radiant, by the way, which is also, yeah. So when you're healing your body, I mean, I've listened, I don't know if you've ever listened to Dr. Joe Dispenza talk.
Yes.
Okay. So his journey started when he was in this horrific accident and he broke every bone in his body, and they said he was going to be a quadriplegic. And again, the feeling washed over him.
Yeah.
The knowing. And but he, I believe, visualized his cells healing. He went deep. Is that kind of what you did? You did a visualization of you walking and little by little? Is that what it was?
It was a little bit of that. The interesting thing is we're all uniquely different, and some people can't see this, and that's part of, so for some people, as I said, there's 2 or 3 tools. One of them for some people is visualizing the cells healing and repairing. For myself, it wasn't that deep. I'd not done that much research into understanding Dr. Joe Dispenza. I had not heard of him at that point. This was all stuff that was coming through me that I was receiving. So what I was told in this regard, Dr. Susan, was to imagine 2 things. The first thing is do it for somebody else and do it for yourself, because I didn't have enough drive or motivation to heal myself for myself, but I had the motivation to do it for my son.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah. So I had the 2 motivations. The first motivation for my son is I wanted to be able to take him to the park. I wanted to leave the house. I was housebound. I couldn't do anything without anyone. I had no independence, nothing. I would go to physio or physical therapy 2 a week. I would have a community bus come and help me. I'd have a lady take care of Alfie. I was housebound. I was completely isolated from the community. The only time I got out was to go to the physio.
Right.
And the thing with this is that starts to drive you insane as well.
Right.
You start to, because you've got nobody, I suffered from depression, from isolation.
Right.
So that started to eat away at me. So for me to do something for myself was very difficult because I was in a state of depression. So I needed to look outside of myself, which was my son. And it was like, I need to take him out to the park. I need for him to have some kind of normality. Therefore, I can. So the first driver for me was getting out of the house and getting my husband to help me take the steps with the pram, to help me. And he was teaching me how to be able to put the pram in the car. We were buying things that were so light that I could pick them up. And this was my life. Every day I would practice for 2 to 3 minutes being able to get out of the house on my own. having a period of time with no medication, so I was actually able to drive a car, so I wasn't on any opioids. Right. And this was a journey that I went through. Now, the other part of me, I loved to dance. So the thought of not being able to move and dance again was kind of crippling in one regard, but my motivation on the other. So I made the decision that I could either mope around and say, I'm never going to dance again, feel sorry for myself, or I could go, you know what? I remember the times that I was dancing. So I used to lay down on the lounge and I used to imagine myself dancing around the room. So right. I'd play the music and I'd imagine that I was dancing. Even though I wasn't dancing, I was sat or laid on the lounge, I would imagine that I was dancing.
Right.
And that started to strengthen my legs. So that, in conjunction with my husband helping me move, that's what got me to a place of being able to walk again.
That's amazing. So is that part of step 3, 4, 5, and 6?
Yeah, so there's the hope, the belief, the know, and the be and the do. So you have to have hope that you can. So there's the acceptance of the situation. Once you've accepted the situation, you must hold the hope that what you imagine your life to be, I imagined that I would walk again. I didn't know how, I didn't know when, but I had the hope that it was going to happen. Once you've got that feeling of hope and that's unshakable, the hope is unshakable. You have times where you're like, oh, it's not going to work, but you're able to go, no, I decided that I have hope that this future is possible for me. And it's returning yourself back to that constantly, because if you don't have something to bring yourself back to, you will get lost in the darkness. You have to have a light to be able to bring you out of the darkness. And it's cementing that hope. And that hope is something inside of you, not external.
Right.
And hope for me, I had to use my son, but the hope for me was that I could dance and I could feel the improvement. The hope was there because I could feel that I could dance again. Even though that it wasn't happening to me right in that moment, I was imagining it was. See, your body and your mind know no difference between your imagination and right. the reality of what yeah. is happening.
Right.
They thought I were dancing, even though I wasn't dancing.
I know. Most people don't get that. You know that, right?
Yeah, most people don't. Yeah, they really don't.
Is there an attachment of some sort to pain? Chronic pain patients, do they develop, how do I phrase this? If they just expect when they're going to get up in the morning that they're going to be in pain, and it's almost like they don't want to lose that because that becomes part of their identity. Is that, do you find that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's, and this is the thing, this is why I set my clinics up, Dr. Susan, because it's not easy. It's really difficult to break the cycle of pain. It's highly addictive because your body becomes addicted to the hormones. You become addicted to the stress hormone cortisol. Right. You become addicted to being high adrenaline running through constantly in this fight or flight. You become addicted to it. You rewire your brain. So there's a part of the brain called the reticular activating system. You actually rewire that to only perceive and see the world through the lens of pain. Right. So you have many facets to break down, many, many things to break down, because once you've wired your brain for pain, the pain is more powerful than you, because you are asking for permission to the pain. Is it okay that I go out today? Do you think that I'm going to be able to go out, or am I going to be in pain? Or I don't know if I can do that. It's too hard for me. And then what happens is you have these secondary gains. And secondary gains for me and a lot of my clients is that partners who weren't loving, partners that didn't help around the house, start to help because they see that you're in suffering, they see that you're in pain, they see that for days after when you've pushed yourself to the extreme that you can't do anything. They see that you are exhausted. They see that you've got fatigue. They actually start to see that you're struggling. So they do more for you. There's that love and acceptance piece.
Right.
Getting more. So for some people, for some of my clients, what they found difficult is the doctor relationship, the doctor-patient relationship. So the doctor was giving them sympathy and empathy and listening to them. And that was keeping them in pain because they felt heard and seen and understood for the first time in their life without realizing that's the relationship that they built with the doctor. And the center of that is the pain.
Right.
And letting go of that pain is you've got to let go of that relationship.
That is really tricky. That it really, on so many levels, pretty interesting dynamic there, truly. So part of what you're saying is that in some ways, you are rewiring your brain. You're breaking the habit of being yourself somewhat. You're changing your mindset. You're completely rewiring.
Yes.
Which takes time.
Yes.
So you must battle people who come to you and say, I can't do this. I've heard you're a miracle person. I want you to cure me in a week. That must put some pressure on you.
I don't work with people like that, because the first thing that I say to people is that I'm not your healer. I'm not a guru. I'm not a magician. But what I am is someone who's been where you are. I know the pitfalls. I know what's around the corner. I know what you've got to overcome. I know what's going to help you. And I can help you access your body. I can help you rewire your brain. I can help you rewire your nervous system. But at the end of the day, the responsibility lies with you. Right. And the more that you show up and turn up, and the more that you commit to this, the quicker and the faster your healing journey will be. No one can tell you how long it's going to take, only you.
Right.
The power is inside of you. And if I take that power away from you, you will never get out of pain. I hold the container of who you are becoming, and I will hold the space of a pain-free version of you that's happy, enjoying your life. And I will do everything that I can to hold that image of who you're becoming, so you know with every cell that is coming. You just don't know how and when, and you have the faith to hold in there no matter what happens, no matter what turbulence comes your way. You're going to understand why, you're going to understand the pitfalls, and you're going to be able to get yourself out of it. But it's not my responsibility. You must take ownership for that. And if they can't, I can't work with them. It's as simple as that, because I am not taking responsibility for somebody else's healing journey. it's their life. Exactly. And what if something happens to me?
Right.
And I'm not around for them.
Right.
It's teach a man to fish. You feed him for a lifetime. You give a man a fish. You've just fed him for one meal.
Right.
That's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to teach people exactly what I did in the quickest, fastest, shortest way with the best results. That's my role, I believe.
Do you have a pretty good success rate?
Yes, I do have a very good success rate. So the 2 years of clinical trials that I did, it was a physiotherapist and an exercise physiologist. They brought 20 of their most difficult patients where they'd been told that nothing could be done. They'd actually had, they were either paid out by insurance companies, were getting paid out, or were on the path to being paid out. So we had three different stages of people in the development. They were all written off. Nothing could be done. They'd had all their operations. They'd maxed out everything that could be done in the medical community. And we had two classes go through. So one had 6 weeks, and then we had two catch-ups, and one had a full 12-month program. And what we recognized is those that had the full 12-month program, they had long-term results. So after the 18 months, so we go back and we're testing until 5 years, we're going back and doing questionnaires and stuff and see how they are. What we noticed is those that stayed with us for 12 months mm-hmm. had a weekly catch-up in a group environment. They sustained within a 10% marker of the reduction of pain, reduction of painkillers. And this is really interesting, reduction in smoking, alcohol consumption. So habits started to reduce and fall because they started to see that they were coping mechanisms because they weren't dealing with the pain. So a lot of it is seeing what coping mechanisms that you are using in order to be able to deal with this. And it's not to go, that's wrong, get off it, don't do that. It's seeing it for what it is. Once you see it for what it is, you don't fear it. And then eventually you just start to reduce smoking yourself. You start to stop drinking because you go, oh, I'm doing it because I'm struggling right now. That's right. Okay. It's okay to struggle. I'm having a bad day. Do right. I still want to have that can of beer? Do I still want to have that bottle of wine? Do I still want to go out and have that cigarette, knowing that information?
Right.
Yes or no? And this is the thing. When you teach people this stuff, they can start to heal themselves for the long term.
Exactly. They learn this. You teach them the strategies, and then they're self-empowered. Are you an energy healer as well?
There's part of energy. I teach people how to heal themselves through energy healing.
You teach people how to heal themselves without an external energy healer.
I've been brought here to teach people. I've not been brought here to be a healer. I'm here to help people remember that they are their own healer.
You're saying that everyone is capable of being an energy healer?
Yes. Their own energy. It's their own energy. It's their own body. It's their own mind. Absolutely. You have complete control over your mind and body if you understand that you have it. So when you know that you're powerful, you're more powerful than the pain, and you know that you have control over your life and you can create the life that you want, you then don't need an external.
Right.
Because what happens is you go into the be and do. So you become the person that you want to be. And the person that you want to be is someone who doesn't get sick again, who has the capacity and capability of healing themselves. Then you start to do those things for yourself, because prevention is much easier and cheaper than a cure. You start to prevent these things for yourself. And because you have got to a point where you can heal yourself and you've learned these tools and techniques, and eventually you don't need my support or my other coach's support, because you're like, you know what, I've got this. I understand my body. I'm communicating with my body. I get what's going on. I know that when I feel this, it's because of this. I see why I've got that habit. You start to build a level of self-esteem as you know that you can heal yourself. It's a journey of trusting and believing in who you are, and trusting and believing that your body is so intelligent. And once you access its intelligence, you change your life. And the only reason why you need someone else is because you can't see what you don't know that's there. That's why you need someone external to you, because we have this invisible ceiling above us.
Right.
And you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And teaching is important, because you start to teach people on what they don't know. You give them golden nuggets. We have to be our own gurus. We shouldn't rely on someone external to us for a long period of time, because then we're becoming powerless. It's okay, it's a stepping stone. But the end game is that you become the captain of your own ship.
Yeah, I agree. You can only listen to inspirational speakers so long. If you feel great while you're listening to them, but then you go out and then you're yourself and you have to deal with you. So I totally agree. So what's a non-negotiable for you, Dawn, in your daily life?
A non-negotiable for me is, that's such a great question. A non-negotiable for me is that when I catch myself being cruel and unkind in any kind of way to myself or external to me, that I sit with it before I go to sleep and I resolve that hurt part inside of me and I hold it and I don't judge it. So non-negotiable.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. So you've gone through a lot of training, a lot of spiritual training, researched Eastern medicine, I'm sure as well.
Yeah. And psychotherapy as well. So I've done using the collective consciousness to heal yourself as well, which is through psychotherapy process work, allowing relationship channels and body channels and things like that. So what that means is that you use what's around you to help you heal yourself.
Fascinating.
Just looking at your situation and situation and circumstance, seeing patterns that are reoccurring.
Right.
So I teach people how to look for patterns that are reoccurring in their life, how to sit with it, how to hold themselves, how to access their inner child, hold the wound, bring the wound into the present moment. Because basically what wounds are, physical, mental, emotional, is you have been frozen in time from a traumatic experience. Even though you might see that it's not a traumatic experience right now as an adult, as a child, right, it may have been highly traumatic. And it's bringing you back from that traumatic experience, not needing to know why it's happened, but right, just holding and bringing and integrating that so that part of you can emotionally evolve. Because we split off. This is the thing. Small parts of us split off. We give our power away to those parts. We can't heal if we're fragmented.
Right. So you believe that every physical wound begins with an emotional wound?
To an extent, I believe anything chronic, absolutely.
Okay.
When it comes to acute, not necessarily. If okay, your body's able to heal and repair from an acute situation, then I would just look for the patterns. Is this something that keeps happening to me? Do I keep tripping up all of the time? If something keeps happening to you over and over again, then yes, I believe it's emotional. But if it's a one-off situation or circumstance,
right, right,
I don't buy into that first day. because you're just trying to look for problems and create problems and look at things to heal, right, things that are wrong with you. So that's focusing on what's wrong with you, when really we should focus on what's going right, which is back to the gratitude.
Right. Exactly. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Where can my audience find you?
So I have multiple channels. The first one that is really, really great, Dr. Susan, is I have a Facebook community called healyourself.dc. And that community, I offer programs for free, training, education, helping people understand what's going on for them. So that's a really good place to start. I give a lot of information because what I'm sharing is not mainstream. It's not known. And I understand that people need to get a bit of an experience and understanding of what's going on and how they can relate this and bring this into their life. The other way that people can reach out to me is you can go onto my website, which is alleviatepain.com.au.
I want to thank you sincerely. This was a pleasure to meet you. And I can't wait for the book when it comes.
I'll let you know.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Dawn.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Now you can share your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. Go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.